Call to meeting the Senate Labor and Commerce. Let the record reflect that it's about 3 minutes after 2 p.m. on February 2nd, 2010. We do have a quorum. Most importantly, we do have all members of the committee present. To my left, Senator Bennie Davis. To her left, Senator Con Bundy. To my far right, Senator Kevin Meyer. And to my immediate right, Senator Joe Thomas. The purpose of today's meeting is to briefly discuss Senate Bill 175, Internet Access Authority, and to hear a comprehensive, more importantly, to hear a comprehensive overview of broadband in the state of Alaska. And there was a quote that I came across, and it was by United States Secretary of Commerce Gary Locke, recently made this statement, and he said, quote, high-speed internet access is the lifeblood of today's economy. Having access to the internet's economic, health, and educational benefits should be as much of a fundamental American right as attending a quality school. And I believe that this fundamental right must extend to all Alaskans. And so here in the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, we will be presented today with an overview from knowledgeable persons who have been invited to share information about broadband technology. As a great state, Alaska needs great broadband. As policymakers, we need to focus on broadband technology as a means to provide to the end users the fastest broadband possible. As policymakers, we should be like consumers should be, well-informed. Broadband infrastructure access and expansion is fundamental to economic development. With that in context, we should understand that three-fourths of the communities in Alaska have populations of less than 1,000 people. And I believe that broadband technology can connect regions of Alaska together and can connect all of Alaska to the world. Broadband distributes education, medicine, public safety, and economic opportunities. Broadband provides the ability in the 21st century for rural Alaska and all of Alaska to advertise its goods and services within the state and to the world. We need to understand the end-to-end distribution of broadband. We need to understand first mile, middle mile, last mile, and we must understand the broadband delivery modalities, whether it's fiber, radio frequency, or satellite. And while we have Senate Bill 175 before us, it is my intent that we do not need at this time to advance any legislation in this area, but rather to listen to the broadband opportunities from knowledgeable people and to find out what is going on in the state in that regard. So anyway, I could talk a long time about my personal thoughts as to broadband, but in the interests of time and kind of getting to the point, I think I'd defer to the invited testimony so that we can listen to them. And I guess first I'd like to present to you Mike Black, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, to the table. And thank you for being with us today. And please state your name and identify your affiliation, and the floor will be yours.
Thank you. My name is Mike Black. I am the Deputy Commissioner for Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And with that broad of base, my responsibilities are primarily in the rural issues and community issues. However, I will say that broadband became one of my subject areas to deal with as Deputy Commissioner, probably because it was recognized by the governor and the administration that economic development and broadband are a attached subject area where economic development and economic development opportunities are very much tied in this day and age with the availability of reliable and high-speed broadband. The state of Alaska has for at least 6 years, and Chairman Pickett can correct me on this, been responsible for providing grants for the expansion of broadband in Alaska. Now, that was originally done under the Rural Utility Services, USDA's program where the federal government had made money available to the state of Alaska, among other states, for grants to be given to companies and organizations that were willing to provide broadband or expand broadband. Those grants, in comparison to today's money that's in the what's called Stimulus Act or American Recovery Act, certainly were insignificant, because back then we had approximately $12 million to provide to telecommunications and expansion of through grants. We were able to provide some relatively modest grants to the companies that were willing to make some expansion, and that was where I first got involved with the broadband issue. Certainly with the passage of the Stimulus Act, that my involvement and others became much more active. Of course, Stimulus Act provided $7.2 billion nationwide for under two programs, at least two programs, but the primary programs were within Department of Commerce and their NTIA. That's the agency that actually implemented it for commerce, and then, of course, in the USDA through their RUS program. Those grants, when they became available, when we became aware, as the state of Alaska became aware, that these were going to be provided to states around and that Alaska would be guaranteed to receive funding under that, we formed a committee in the administration that included Department of Administration, Office of Management and Budget, Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and the Department of Commerce, and therefore I was brought into that. We were able to look at the issues of broadband in relation to what we considered to be the important interests of the state of Alaska. And I believe in your packet you will see that we have a number of letters that were provided from the governor to the agencies that express a lot of our opinions, and those are there for you to see. But I would just like to summarize that the state of Alaska recognized, and we reminded the federal agencies that we, if any state was to be considered unserved, it would be this state. Not only do we have enormous expanse of land, but we have extremely small communities where the customer base in itself would not attract broadband on a commercial basis. But where the geography and the topography present tremendous challenges for expansion of broadband beyond just the rail belt areas where we currently have fiber optic cables. So we reminded them if this money was to be used for the provision of and the addressing of the underserved areas, that Alaska certainly was a great candidate to receive these funds. We also reminded them that it's because of the lack of infrastructure in rural Alaska, no roads, very little primitive communication systems, much of the availability of the commerce that you would see in the rail belt area being unavailable to small communities and business people, that broadband could make a huge difference for the areas of the state that are suffering the most from unemployment and essentially low incomes. So we did say that as far as we were concerned, it would have tremendous benefit. We pointed out to them that the unemployment rates that were trying to be addressed in the Stimulus Act were even higher in the state of Alaska in certain sections of the state. So therefore, we certainly felt that portions of the state would be of high need. We pointed out the lack of access to health care and that telemedicine is really the only avenue that can provide any effective health care in many parts of the state. And We also pointed out that the health, even though the state of Alaska and many of the healthcare organizations operating in the state have really pioneered telemedicine in the United States, but yet still it remains highly unreliable because of its dependency on satellite technologies, which was brought to light to me just by discussing with the information technology director for Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation when he pointed out that over a period of 3 days they were without any service because the satellite malfunctioned. And of course at that point they were unable to transmit any of the healthcare data that they needed. We also realized that small businesses, in especially in more remote areas, can make up for their lack of access to infrastructure through having availability of broadband. And of course that is often shown to us through such things as the marketing efforts being made by corporations and organizations and associations in the more remote areas of the state using broadband or internet in order to market products, where we see not just native handcrafts, but we also see trips and ecotourism being being advertised, and some of the small bed and breakfasts are advertised and using whatever internet they can have available to them. So this was important for everyone to recognize that it would have a positive economic benefit. Finally, one of the areas that we certainly wanted to point out was again the importance of broadband in education. Of course, this has been recognized by the federal government, and there has been a special arrangement made for the school systems to have access to a satellite bandwidth. And unfortunately, still it's highly limited as far as, but it. The schools do get priority in all the our more remote communities, and there is a great deal of benefit for the educational system being able to find reliable satellite and broadband. This I was reminded of this when I was watching a class being given in King Salmon at the Savick Center to young adults on mathematics and applied mathematics from the AFTEC Center in Seward, and the instructor was in full view of the students as well. It was a two-way communication going on, and they was able to actually conduct a class in that that method, and that certainly has a lot of promise for our more smaller, more rural schools programs. So. And a lot of students are taking, because of the limited curriculum that's available in the small schools, a lot of students are taking or are attempting to take broadband or distance delivery systems of education. So where do we stand now? After we made those comments, we began a process of working with our DC office in order to understand how this program was going to be rolled out. The state of Alaska was offered the chance to actually comment on the individual applications, and I think you have copies of all the applications that have been received thus far in the round one of the grant funding. We declined to do that because of issues about whether we should be the appropriate organization to judge the technical feasibility of such applications, and secondly, to lend the governor's name to winners or losers. We did not want to do that, so we declined that offer, and I think we feel better every day because we did. It would have put us in the state of Alaska as a judge in front of what is an array of technical applications of which we would have had a hard time to evaluate, frankly. Where we stand now, of course, is that there has been some awards made. I think if you look at your on the spreadsheet, we can point out, first of all, that there was an award made to the Denali Commission. We were asked to designate an agency or organization that could conduct broadband mapping, which was one portion of this award, and we made the decision to designate the Denali Commission, and they received funding where they will go about identifying the access and the areas of the state where there is broadband available based on the speeds and capacities of the there's also been recently an announcement of $88 million in rural broadband projects that were awarded by the Agricultural Department. These were to the United Utilities of Anchorage and for the middle mile broadband service for 65 communities in the Yukon and Kuskokwim Delta area and the Bristol Bay regions. And I think there will be some graphics that you can see about those later on. There was also a $28 million award for a organization serving basically the same area, I believe, and that was under the Sea Lion Awards, Sea Lion Corporation Award. And so the reality is that we've gotten some applications. We probably have received we have received some money under the programs, and that they are being moved forward. The reality is, however, that most of the money in the first round that was set aside, over $4 billion, has not been awarded at this stage. And so we expect a lot more activity here in the next few months. And who will receive funding, we certainly do not know, but we would expect additional awards to be made.
Thank you, Mr. Black. Senator Bundy?
Yes, thank you. I want to make sure I heard correctly. You said there were two awards given to groups that basically serve the same area. Are we giving awards to competing entities or duplicate services? What's going on?
Senator, through the chair, I don't believe that these are competing. I think they are actually complementary proposals for middle mile, final mile, as they call it. Mm-hmm. Basically, taking the distribution of the broadband service and taking it all the way into the households. That's what I understand. And that brings up a point, however, that the state of Alaska does not have access to the complete proposals. So we will depend on companies to explain them to us, because most of that information that was submitted to the various funding agencies is proprietary. And so it's not necessarily shared with the state of Alaska. We know some of the general details or the general statements and overviews, but we don't know the details.
Right, Mr. Black, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next we'll have, it's Tessa, is it Reiner? And she's with the Denali Commission telephonically, broadband capabilities.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Would you please identify yourself and state your affiliation?
My name is Tessa Renner. I'm the Director of Programs at the Denali Commission. I'll be speaking today on behalf of Craig Johnson, our Chief Operating Officer, to discuss with you an overview of the Commission's work in broadband.
The floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for this opportunity to present. What I would like to do very briefly in less than 5 minutes is cover three items. One, a brief overview of what the Denali Commission's mission is. Two, what our efforts have been in the last 10 years of the existence of the agency in broadband. And then finally, and most importantly, as it relates to the efforts you all are undertaking today, to provide you with an update on what we're currently doing in broadband, specifically the grant award we recently received from NTIA, as Deputy Commissioner Black just discussed. So the Denali Commission is an independent federal agency. We were created back in 1998 by an act of Congress. We have three primary areas we work in. One, basic infrastructure, planning, design, and construction across the state of Alaska, training and economic development initiatives, and then finally government coordination. What I think it's important to note is that in our 10-year history as an agency, we've had relatively little involvement in the development of advanced telecommunications in Alaska. However, it is something that is specifically identified in our mission within our statute as an area, we refer them to them as program areas at our agency that the commission can have a role in. So in terms of what we've done in the past, back in 2000, the commission worked in partnership with the University of Alaska and the state to conduct a survey of Alaska communities that identified that in about 60% of our rural communities, they had unreliable dial-up connection to the internet. Now, we know we've come a long way since 2000 with much of the investment that's been undertaken by the telecommunications industry in Alaska, but at the end of the day, there's still much work to be done related to a number of areas across the spectrum, as Deputy Commissioner Black was referring to in his testimony. So where are we at now, and what are we planning to do in the near future? In 2009, as was stated, Governor Parnell designated the Denali Commission as the entity that would apply for the funds under broadband mapping for Alaska that were available through the U.S. Department of Commerce, specifically NTIA. And these funds were available as part of what is commonly referred to as ARRA, or the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, that was approved by Congress. Now, the purpose of these funds that were specifically directed to NTIA was to make funding available to states and territories so they could undertake mapping to determine the amount of unserved and underserved areas in their state, which would, in essence, create a broadband map for the country that will be presented back to Congress in 2011. So the commission worked in partnership with a number of organizations, including the state of Alaska and the university, to prepare that application. We were notified in November of 2009 that it was successful, and we would be funded in the amount of $1.8 million for the effort. So what I finally wanted to conclude with was giving you an overview of what our two primary efforts as it relates to that $1.8 million will be. First, we'll be engaged in the comprehensive map of broadband services in Alaska that's going to identify the unserved and underserved areas. That will be done by state census block down to that level. And the commission is working in partnership on that effort with Connected Nations and the telecommunications providers to create the map. I know you're going to hear from providers as well as Connected Nations a bit later in the hearing today. Our major role, however, in this funding that we're going to be receiving as it relates to broadband is the creation of a broadband steering committee. That steering committee has membership from state, federal, telecommunication providers, and certainly the Alaska State Legislature. Just want to take a brief moment to thank Senator Pascavan for his agreeing to participate on the committee. They're going to be meeting. They have not met yet. We're working to move that forward and have an initial meeting very shortly here. One of the items that the commission is still working on is the agreement between NTIA that will functionally transfer the funds to us and what the mechanism for that transfer will be. The committee is going to have three primary activities, and they're going to produce three specific work products. So I wanted to just also overview those quickly for you. One will be an annual status report on broadband in Alaska. Second, an annual work plan that will summarize the state, private, federal efforts to develop broadband in Alaska. And then finally, an annual research plan that will provide recommendations on potential research needs in broadband adoption, technology, and other research issues. And the Denali Commission will serve primarily in the convening, administrative support, and coordination of that steering committee, as well as the three deliverables that I just referenced. There's one other item that we're going to be undertaking very shortly that also relates to the award, and that's as part of the committee's effort. We're going to be working with UA's Institute of Social and Economic Research to do initial research that would identify what the ramifications of adoption, benefits of, et cetera, of broadband will be in Alaska. So the short story here is that we have just only recently received this funding. We have yet to undertake some of the specific deliverables, such as getting the steering committee together. We look forward to doing that in the near future. I tried to keep my comments short, as I know you have several folks to hear from. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to address any questions from members of the committee at this time.
Thank you very much. Any specific questions? Seeing none, I thank you very much, and we would now call Mr. Steve Smith, Chief IT Officer for University of Alaska. Are you on the line?
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Steve Smith. I'm the Chief Information Technology Officer for the University of Alaska system. I'd like to just build on the comments made by the first two folks here and tell you a little bit of what the university is doing and what we see are some of the critical needs in the state from our perspective for broadband. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you about this. I'm very glad with the leadership that you are taking to focus on broadband in the state. We think it is an essential infrastructure for the state of Alaska, as essential as our other infrastructures with transportation, with power, with health and safety. We, of course, as the state's public university system, have a mission to deliver higher education to every citizen of the state, regardless of where they live. We are very challenged to do that because of the infrastructure for broadband or the lack thereof in areas of the state. Just this morning, literally, at my staff meeting, we discussed the challenges that our Interior Aleutians campus has, which has rural ed centers across the state out in the Aleutian Islands and interior and western Alaska, and they are unable to get online and to use our core administrative systems for HR, for finance, for student information, and they have to find other means to do that simply because their connectivity is not sufficient enough for them to make use of these online systems. We've been very active in this with the state, with the Denali Commission, and with the carriers to find solutions for this. The university, working with the Denali Commission and the Institute of the North, sponsored three audio conference public briefings about the stimulus broadband funding opportunities. We also held a face-to-face workshop at the University of Alaska Anchorage campus, again, open to the public to move this forward. We think the best way for us to do this in the state is to do this in partnership, working together. One of the big challenges to get sufficient broadband out to all the areas of the state is to find a business case that will work for the expense, the capital expense of putting in that infrastructure and then operating it with a very thin population base, and how well that works. Some of the carriers have been very smart in the way that they've done that and been able to leverage some of the funds for that where there are subsidies. But that still is a very difficult proposition, and we're very sympathetic with the challenges the carriers face, and we want to work with them to help build out those networks. We're in the content business in the university. We have no interest in running separate networks, and in fact, we think that that would be counterproductive in the state to have a separate network that we run publicly. We want to work with the carriers to make that happen. We have challenges in both the middle mile and the last mile. There was reference to two of the proposals that were funded under the Broadband Stimulus Act. One addressed last mile, C-line, and one addressed middle mile, and that was the one to United Utilities. I think we have pretty good connectivity in the state for bringing broadband into the state, but to get it out to the western regions, the northern regions, out in the Aleutians, in areas in the southeast, to the smallest communities. That's the middle mile connection. That still remains a significant and serious challenge. One of the things that the FCC has been looking at that has been emphasized also by both Departments of Commerce and Department of Agriculture in the federal broadband stimulus program is working with anchor institutions. And that would be schools, that would be hospitals, that would be government entities, that would be safety and security, and other anchor institutions that can help bring broadband into small communities, and then it can be spread out to the individuals within those communities. We think that that's something that deserves a hard look at. We in the university have worked on that for a number of years, both in the state and in partnerships that we work on with other research and education institutions outside of the state. As you're probably well aware, universities have been in the forefront of moving out with the internet and broadband development for a number of years. We have been an active member at the University of Alaska since its inception of Internet 2 that pushes for development with new applications for the next generation of internet. Our carriers have made use of some of these anchor institutions when they can. Deputy Commissioner Black mentioned the subsidy programs that are out there, and these go to K-12 schools and public libraries, and then there's a separate subsidy program that goes out to rural health. Both of these work through the FCC. An unintended consequence, however, of those subsidies is that they create stovepipes for broadband deployment because they're very specific to those communities I mentioned, but others cannot make use of that. For instance, post-secondary education cannot take advantage of the education subsidy, which is limited to K-12. So what we have in Alaska is a situation where students may graduate from their high school in their village, but then not be able to still live in that village and take courses from any post-secondary institution that could be delivered electronically because they don't have the access to the broadband that would make that available to them. And we at the university and other post-secondary institutions in the state can't take advantage of that subsidy to deliver education out there. We're hopeful that as the FCC comes out with its national broadband plan, that that will be addressed and that that will open up the ability for many other players to deliver broadband to these communities. We welcome the development of the Denali Commission Task Force. We support SB 175. I think it's important in this state for the state of Alaska to have a coherent focus on broadband development. For one thing, a number of other states have a broadband task force or a broadband committee. Sometimes these are under the executive branch, sometimes from the legislative branch. But wherever they come from, it focuses the energies in the state. There are almost always a combination of carriers and consumers. But those states that have those, I think, frankly, have a leg up on us in Alaska when it comes to competing for some of the federal funds that are available. And we think at the university there will be more federal funds coming available for broadband deployment. So it behooves us in Alaska to have a coherent story and a coherent plan for broadband development. I think I'll stop there. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Seeing no questions, we do appreciate University of Alaska sharing you with us for this point in time, so thank you, Mr. Smith. We would call Mr. Bob Pickett, and at this time, I'd also like to recognize the attendance of Representative Guttenberg. He is here with us today, and he has been a strong advocate for improving broadband in Alaska, so I think it's important to recognize his attendance today. But Mr. Pickett, please identify yourself, state your affiliation. Welcome from me on behalf of this committee. And
very good. Well, Senator, Co-Chair, Chairman Passman and members of the committee, it's an honor to be here this afternoon. Excuse me, I do have a little bit of a cold, but my name is Bob Pickett, and I'm chairman of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. I will preface my remarks, however, by saying that most of my comments are relating to my role as the chairman of the Legacy Broadband Work Group. The Legacy Groups were created by administrative order in February 2009 to look at a number of separate areas in the state and hopefully come up with recommendations that will encourage economic development. The broadband group consisted of representatives from the Department of Public Safety, AT&T, OTNA, USDA, ACS, and GCI, with staff support by the commission. Keeping in mind at the time these groups were formed, there were a lot of things up in the air. The stimulus bill had just passed. It was obvious that there was going to be an emphasis upon broadband. But the definition was definitely not there. It was unclear as to how it was going to be rolled out. So we as a group decided we would take advantage of that old medical adage, first do no harm. And we felt the best value we could add would be to sort of step back and focus upon the physical network itself and develop a work product that hopefully could be used as providing some baseline information. Because quite frankly, I don't think most Alaskans are really aware of the nature of the telecommunications system that we do have in this state and how it is paid for. So we looked at some barriers to the deployment of broadband. We took a look at some potential legislative and regulatory considerations, financing issues with what we were aware of, and other mechanisms we thought would be helpful to encourage deployment. At the end of the day, I believe it's fair to say the consensus of the group was that broadband is generally available in urban Alaska, the more populated areas. That doesn't mean that there are problems with spottiness, say, in the Fairbanks area or Matsu or Kenai, but generally, as a rule, there is competition and broadband is available. When you step into rural Alaska, you may have services that are advertised as broadband, but the nature and expense of those services is entirely different than what is available in urban Alaska. And let's face it, the definition of high-speed internet access has changed tremendously in a relatively short period of time. As Deputy Commissioner Mike Black mentioned, we were been involved for about six and a half years with a USDA grant to expand broadband access. We've been able to place about roughly half of the $15 million grant. And because of, you know, how rapidly the technologies were changing and the original legislative language was so restrictive, we quite frankly were having a hard time getting the major telecom companies to come to the table and even apply with the restrictions on that. For the time being, we're just going to kind of step back, let the dust settle with some of these stimulus awards, let the broadband mapping activities go on with the working group, and see where we might best be able to, you know, to place that. The final mile in rural Alaska generally is not the problem. It's that that sort of middle mile from the internet node to the community itself that has been the bottleneck. It's been encouraging to see some of the recent awards. I think that in significant areas of the state, that's going to be extremely helpful. And I'm not going to speak directly to, Senate Bill 175, the merits of, you know, proceeding, not proceeding, but I do think there is some value in stepping back at times and letting the dust sort of settle before locking certain things into place. What I've learned in my experience as a regulator is the law of unintended consequences. You can go with the best of intentions thinking you're, you know, going to get a certain result. but because of the complex interplay of certain things, you end up getting a very different result. I'm going to speak to some federal-type issues here because a great deal of the funding for our telecom system comes through the Federal Universal Service Fund, or USF. In fact, it's in excess of $210 million per year. The commission, I'm now speaking as the RCA chairman, it has been involved with that through the annual certifications that come to us directly and we in turn make to the FCC, and through the initial eligible telecommunication carrier, or ETC, designations that are made in recent years primarily to wireless carriers that open up the door to that subsidy. I believe over time you're going to see new technologies develop with the wireless to kind of help fill in the gaps on that final mile. If you can get that middle mile problem taken care of in a cost-effective manner, you're going to see some of those types of mechanisms and the existing incumbent carriers, you know, improving their technologies also. The federal government is scheduled through the FCC to come up with the federal broadband plan. It was originally scheduled to be released in February. They've delayed that by about a month. So sometime probably in March or April, we'll see something come out. There are talks about reforming the Federal Universal Service mechanism to allow broadband support. That's one of those things that, depending on the details, it sounds good and actually, you know, could be a very positive development. But, however, if it's a zero-sum game at the expense of other uses for that funding, it could have some impacts on existing telecommunications systems. So just for what it's worth. Final note, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska this Friday at a public meeting will be taking up the topic of issuing regulations on access charge reform. It's a little different than what we're talking about, but it does impact it because you have to have the telecom system in place and all of its pieces. The regulations will be released for a 30-day period. It will shape the environment for the interrelationship between the local exchange carriers and the long-distance carriers. So just a heads up on that. With that, I will stop my formal comments. I'm going to make sure that Jeff gets a full copy of the Legacy Workgroup product that he can circulate to the committee. So thank you again.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pickett. I think what we'll do is transition now a little bit out of order. There's a gentleman that did travel here to Juneau to testify in person, and so I would welcome Ike. Is it Icard?
Thanks.
And if he's, I believe, with Kodiak Kenai Cable Company, so if you could please, for the record, they'll be focusing on you at the TV in a minute, but for the committee, we need to know your name and your affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Ike Icard. I'm owner of Great Pacific Cable, and I'm working with the Kodiak Kenai Cable Company on a number of projects in the state.
Right, thank you. We're all yours.
Okay. Thanks. And don't be shy about showing me the shepherd's hook if I run long here. I wanted to do a couple of things. One, describe the company I'm working with, Kodiak Kenai Cable Company, a couple of its projects, indeed its efforts to extend broadband equitably throughout the state of Alaska, and then discuss very briefly our comments, which I think are consistent with some of those you've heard already from RCA and Mike Black as well, on direction of broadband policy in Alaska and broadly and federally. So let's see, I started working with the Kodiak Kenai Cable Company even before it became the Kodiak Kenai Cable Company. It was actually formed in 2001. The purpose, the project, the dedicated effort of the company at that time was to extend fiber optic telecommunications capacity to the Kenai Peninsula and Kodiak Island, two areas representing roughly 10% of the state's population that heretofore have not had the benefit of real broadband access, as even as currently defined. The project involves something like 600, 650 miles of fiber optic telecommunications cable. It came out of it was mostly a submarine installation extending from the fiber hub in Anchorage down with landings along the Kenai Peninsula, Kenai and Homer, ultimately to Kodiak Island, a landing on the north end of the island in the city of Kodiak, another segment that ran around to the Alaska Aerospace Kodiak Launch Complex on the east side of Kodiak Island, and finally a return leg to that system that came from Kodiak back into Seward, where the system completes a circle back to Anchorage over existing overland fiber optic cable. That project was roughly a $37 million project. As I indicated, it provided the first ever fiber-based broadband capacity to the peninsula and Kodiak Island. It was completed in 2006 on time, within budget, and has operated flawlessly ever since then. The cable company is organized as a carrier's carrier, so that rather than entering the retail market with services or competing with the existing carriers, larger carriers in the state, or ILEX, the local incumbents, the Kodiak Kenai Cable Company is merely a system builder, owner, and provider of capacity to the other carriers, so that today I know all the major carriers carry traffic to Kenai and Kodiak over the fiber of the Kodiak Kenai Cable Company. More recently here, a little over a year ago, the cable company began work on what we call the Northern Fiber Optic Link project. This is a project which has been in the works for some period. We saw an opportunity with the implementation of the Stimulus Act to try and extend, capitalize broadband capacity to the vast majority of Western Alaska, something like 40% of the geographic area of the state, equivalent to on the order of 16% of all the lower 48 in geographic area. The system would be a fiber optic cable that extends out of now the southern terminus of fiber in Kodiak Island out to the Aleutian Islands in Unalaska. Landing points then in Bristol Bay along the western portion of the state, ultimately up to Prudhoe Bay, which is the northernmost extent of fiber trunk line capacity in Alaska today. The project we believe is tailor-made and answers the mandates, the specifications of the NTIA and our U.S. Programs distributing the broadband stimulus funds. To date, we've not gotten affirmative word on a grant under the initial round, under round one of that. We were heartened to see that the program recognizes the importance of extending broadband in Alaska through a recent grant to the UUI project, as well as the Sea Lion project. We would have been even more gratified, of course, to see that they had granted funds to the NFOL project. The project is moving ahead with an aggressive application under the very recently announced NOFA Round 2 funding, Notice of Funds Availability, and we'll be working toward that. Finally, we're working on a larger project that would extend fiber for the first time over the Arctic Circle between landing points in Asia, in Tokyo, Japan, intermediate landings in Alaska, and then ultimately to Europe, to London. The project would be a substantial improvement on any existing communications, telecommunications, broadband capacity extending between Asia and Europe, and greatly reducing the signal delay, the signal latency that is critically important, really, for today's commerce. I wanted to mention then briefly the filings that we have made through the FCC and also directly to the temporary broadband, the administration's broadband task force last year, particularly because we have taken the position that I think we've heard from several other folks here today, in that broadband, we believe, should not be limited to one standard for rural areas and yet another standard for urban areas. We think it's critically important that a federal broadband strategy, and we think this is important for Alaska's position, of course, that a federal broadband strategy recognize a broadband standard across the board that doesn't institutionalize sort of a divide between rural broadband access and that available in urban areas. Let's see, Dr. Smith mentioned a few minutes ago that the NTIA now has a program focusing on anchor institutions. That's partly a focus of this second round of the funding, and we concur that while that it is important to get broadband to the anchor institutions, it is also important that the funds be used more broadly to service the entire communities in the rural areas. We also concur that the subsidy programs have been, in Dr. Smith's term, somewhat stovepipe in a little bit of an erratic distribution. We would like, in particular, for a national broadband strategy to begin to look at incorporating this subsidy consideration for middle mile projects and not just last mile connectivity, and to help to support broadband extension, because it is so particularly difficult to capitalize broadband infrastructure projects to rural areas, sparsely populated rural areas. I've probably used enough of your time. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much. Very informative. Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How much does a project cost, the one that stretches from London to Tokyo, just out of curiosity? I've got my own calculation here, but I just want to see how close I come.
I'm not sure if I should put mine on the table before you're at. we're figuring something on the order of $1.2
billion. Oh, okay. All right. Figured $1 billion project.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That order of magnitude. Yeah.
It's pittance, you know. And what is the payoff anticipated on a project such as that?
Sufficient to make that an economic project on its own. So that actually is a project that's not a subject of our applications, obviously, under the Broadband Stimulus Act. That would be separately financed and paid.
And it looks like, if I may?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, part of this obviously is this one, and this is the broader project, of course, this as well. Who regulates that? The RCA regulate any part of it? Not at all, because there's it only touches ground, or is that why we're staying offshore?
No, honestly, the carrier model, I defer to the RCA.
You said no, they're shaking their
head. As a carrier, particularly with under a threshold number of customers, it typically doesn't trigger the RCA threshold of regulation. The international project, no.
Not at all. Okay. Thank you.
If I could just address one question. Is it the latency issue that makes the Europe, Asia, North America program so valuable?
Yes, that is one of the principal benefits of it. It's just exactly that. The latency for existing connections between Asia and Europe run on the order of 140, 150 milliseconds, considerably higher. And those are submarine links through the Mediterranean and Suez, or overland through Sakhalin Island and Russia. So this route does provide a very clean, clear express lane between Europe and Asia. It would provide a gateway into Alaska through a regeneration station at Prudhoe Bay. And it's through, obviously, through a relatively a politically stable region, as opposed to some of the other routes that exist today.
Mr. Eichhardt, thank you very much. It's very helpful and informative.
It was an honor. Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman, you. Committee members.
I believe we have with Connected Nation telephonically a Brent Legg. Is Brent available?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Brent Legg. I am the Director of Stakeholder Relations and Development for Connected Nation. Connected Nation is a subsidiary, is a parent organization of a subsidiary nonprofit that we have established in the state of Alaska called Connect Alaska. We are primarily based in two different places, in the lower 48 in Washington, D.C., as well as in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Our mission is primarily to generate and support economic development through the expansion of broadband availability and through the increasing of broadband adoption rates in areas where broadband is available. The Denali Commission has selected Connect Alaska to partner with us in order to implement the broadband mapping and data collection processes. We are the recipient through the Denali Commission of a grant under the U.S. Department of Commerce's State Broadband Data and Development Grant Program, which provides, as the representative from the Denali Commission mentioned earlier, a total of $1.9 million for broadband data collection, mapping activities, as well as planning activities and the implementation of the steering committee that was discussed. Specifically, the broadband data collection and mapping services total about $1.4 million out of that $1.9 million total. Just some of the things that we will be working to achieve over the course of the next several months. The objectives of the mapping project are numerous, but just to list a few of those briefly. Our main objective is to form strong working relationships with all of Alaska's broadband providers and to support an environment of public and private sector collaboration on broadband issues among all stakeholders involved. We believe that the steering committee that the Denali Commission is forming will do just that. We are also, of course, going to create and maintain the state's first detailed maps of broadband coverage and use those maps to help accurately pinpoint any gaps in broadband availability, both in terms of last mile connectivity as well as middle mile connectivity. We are also going to assess the level of connectivity currently provided to Alaska's community anchor institutions, which is a term that the federal government uses to identify schools, libraries, hospitals, local government agencies, et cetera. We are also going to work with the steering committee that the Denali Commission will be creating throughout the course of its existence. The initial broadband mapping and data collection grant is intended to produce an initial map and then keep that map updated for at least over the course of 2 years, with the possibility of an extension from the federal government up to 5 years to maintain that map. The map that will be created will be an evolving document over time, and we will have the opportunity to refine it over time. It will be available to the public via the connectalaska.org website. It's actually connectak.org. If you have an opportunity to visit that site after the committee hearing, I would invite you to do so. We're beginning currently the outreach process to Alaska's broadband provider community. That process will take place over the course of the next 2 months or so, with the ultimate goal of releasing the first broadband map for the state sometime between the end of March and the end of April. And these are deadlines, of course, that are set as part of the Department of Commerce's NTIA State Broadband Data and Development Grant Program rules, that the first set of data be completed by the sometime between the end of March and the end of April. As I mentioned, we are in the process of reaching out to each of the state's identified broadband providers. Those providers will consist of DSL providers as well as cable providers, fixed wireless, mobile cellular wireless, fiber to the premises providers, as well as the state's middle mile connectivity providers such as Kodiak and I. We will be going through a process by which each of those providers will be asked to sign a non-disclosure agreement, which will protect each provider's proprietary and confidential data, but will allow that data to be used to create a visual depiction of broadband service availability, which will be created and applied to a GIS-based map. Once that non-disclosure agreement is executed with each of the state's providers, our mapping team will be working with each provider to transfer the data to us in a usable format. Once that transfer process is complete and we have generated a visual depiction of broadband service availability and placed that onto a GIS-based map, each provider will have an opportunity to approve the generated map before that information is applied to the aggregated statewide map and before that map is released publicly. We think it's very important for the broadband providers in the state to be able to have final approval over the representation of coverage that is generated by our mapping team before that goes live to the public. As I mentioned, once the map is complete, it will be available to the public via an interactive address searchable online application called Broadband Staff, which will be available via the Connect Alaska website, connectak.org. Per the federal notice of funds availability that governs the state broadband data and development grant program, we are required to submit the raw collected data to NTIA at the census block level of detail according to deadlines that were established, and I mentioned those just a few minutes ago. That data will be submitted to NTIA sometime between the end of March and the end of April. And I mentioned also that the maps will be continuously updated for a period of at least 2 years and hopefully up to 5 years if NTIA chooses to make those remaining funds available. On an ongoing basis, our engineering and technical services division will work to validate the data that is represented on the map and ensure that it is accurate. We will also be inviting public scrutiny of the map to ensure that it is accurate, and they'll be able to provide feedback via the Connect Alaska website at connectak.org. And we will aggregate those inquiries and ensure that all of them are addressed as they come in. I mentioned the Broadband Stat application. The Broadband Stat will allow the public and the steering committee that is to be created by the Denali Commission to search for and identify broadband service at a specific location. If addresses are available, they'll be able to service search for connectivity at a specific address, and that information will include available speeds and service provider names at a specific location. There will also be a satellite imagery available in cases where there are communities across the state where street addresses don't exist. Users will be able to apply a satellite view on the map and see where individual buildings and structures are located, since I know that there are many, many parts of the state where street addresses are not necessarily available. This Broadband Stat application, the interactive application that we've developed in partnership with the SRI, will also allow the steering committee that will be formed to understand and track broadband deployment over time. It will allow them to analyze and prioritize unserved and underserved areas using population and household density information. It will also allow them to track Recovery Act-funded broadband projects. It will allow them to build and evaluate scenarios to help score and prioritize future broadband infrastructure proposals. And it will allow them, in partnership with the University of Alaska's study, to track broadband adoption rates and barriers to broadband adoption community by community over time, which is also very important. We're very excited to be engaged in this project in partnership with the University of Alaska and with the Denali Commission. This is going to be a very intense project over the course of the next couple months to meet NTIA's very aggressive deadlines that they've set for collecting and submitting this information. They will use all of the information that we collect to produce the National Broadband Map, which was alluded to earlier. They are required by the Recovery Act to produce that National Broadband Map by February of 2011. And so they will be utilizing the data that we collect to represent Alaska on that national map. But the state will have access, as I mentioned, to the Broadband Stat application, which will house Alaska's map and will be customizable to Alaska's individual and very unique needs. So with that, I would be glad to pause and answer any questions that members of the committee might have. And we look forward to briefing you as this project continues in the future again. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Legg. I do not see any questions. So we now will proceed to Martin Carey with the part of the GCI broadband team. I understand Mr. Carey is available.
Yes, this is Martin Carey, Vice President at GCI.
All right. Thank you very much. And we have approximately a little less than 25 minutes, but that's not all yours. You're one of three to finish up, so we'll try to. So anyway, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I'll be brief and to the point, and be available to answer questions afterwards. And so in August of last year, GCI, through its wholly owned subsidiary, United Utilities, applied for an RUS grant to build a system throughout Southwest Alaska. We received notification in November that we had moved to the Step 2 process, and finally on January 25th received notification that UUI's application had been funded. The funding is for a $88 million project, as was mentioned earlier, with $44 million of that a grant and $44 million a loan that GCI is guaranteeing. So the project is called Tariff Southwest, and it is the beginning of the implementation of GCI's statewide terrestrial vision. Last year, we made public our desire and vision to move as much of rural Alaska off of the satellite and onto terrestrial facilities, ground-based facilities, and this project is enabling us now to kind of take those first steps. The project is going to interconnect 65 villages in the Bristol Bay and Yukon-Kuskokwim regions, so the two hubs being Dillingham and Bethel. It is a combination of a hybrid fiber system and microwave network. It will be serving 22 villages in the Dillingham region and 43 villages in the YK Delta. Today, GCI owns a microwave system throughout the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta that is essentially a broadband island. There is very high-speed connectivity on that system throughout the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, but it needs to connect to the rest of the world via satellite. The Terra Southwest project is now going to enable us to build a fiber system from Anchorage down to Homer, across Cook Inlet, up over the mountains, up down the Iliamna Lake, and ultimately around the corner, interconnecting to the DeltaNet network and moving all of that traffic off of the satellite and onto fiber and microwave systems. Along the way, we'll be interconnecting 22 villages in the Dillingham region. So in terms of the schedule, work began on the system in 2009. 2010 will be spent primarily on engineering, logistics, and permitting, and an upgrade of the DeltaNet system to get it ready to interconnect with the main backbone that's going to head back to Anchorage. 2011 will begin, about half of the microwave sites will be constructed, and the fiber cable will be laid from Leavelock back to Pyle Bay at the end of Lake Iliamna, and then to Williamsport. And in 2012, final construction of the microwave sites, the underwater system that will be interconnecting Homer to Williamsport will be brought online, and at that point there should be terrestrial broadband service available to all 65 of those communities. As a, the commitments that GCI and UUI have made as part of the grant, we need to have substantial completion of the system within 2 years. We are committing to provide at least 100 megabits of capacity to each community. Residents should be able to enjoy multi-megabit internet service, so a service 1.5 megabit by 500 kilobit kind of service, so very high speed and very low latency as a result of being on the ground as opposed to being on the satellite. So the benefits overall to the regions, it's going to be very high speed, low latency internet access, certainly improved telemedicine services, improved distance learning services, certainly more opportunity for the university system, organizations like AvTech to deliver services directly to people's homes, and we are certainly hoping for an economic development as a result of broadband deployment into these communities and an overall better quality of life. So the system will be serving about 35,000 residents. We are certainly very excited to have received the award, and looking forward to getting going. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll be available to take some questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carey. Any questions? I would just like to say I think it is exciting times for Southwest Alaska that within a relatively short period of time that region of Alaska will become connected with, so to speak, the rail belt and its broadband capabilities. So progress is being made. So seeing no question, we would, I thank you, Mr. Carey, we would call Jason Olson. He is with the AT&T broadband team. Mr. Olson, are you with
yes.
us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for inviting AT&T to this meeting. I'm Jason Olson. I am the Director of Regulatory for AT&T in Alaska. I'm responsible for their government relations, and part of that is working on broadband issues for AT&T in Alaska. Broadband is a critical issue for the state, and AT&T appreciates being part of the discussion. AT&T believes that the Internet has the ability to transform our society, our economy, and our way of life. AT&T is committed to expanding broadband access and increasing broadband adoption across the United States. AT&T Alaska, what you all may know as Alascom, and AT&T Mobility, invested over $140 million in capital in the state of Alaska between 2006 and 2008. AT&T in 2009 again invested tens of millions of dollars in capital in Alaska with the goal of bringing advanced services to the state. AT&T is making significant capital investments to deliver dependable high-speed wireless internet access in the state. In 2009, AT&T added in excess of 20 new cell sites throughout Alaska, improving service quality and coverage, and more sites are planned in 2010. AT&T continues to roll out its third-generation mobile broadband network. In Anchorage, AT&T has significant 3G coverage. Before the end of 2009, AT&T turned up its 3G wireless network in the core areas of Fairbanks. Additional locations are being added to expand coverage as we speak. And I'm certain that many of you noticed when you returned to Juneau for the start of the legislative session, AT&T has rolled out its third-generation wireless network in Juneau. There's still areas of the city that need to be covered, and work is currently underway. It's been increasingly AT&T's experience that consumers not only want broadband, but they demand that broadband be mobile. Following these industry trends, AT&T has supported the deployment of mobile broadband in Alaska. Rural Alaska is probably the most challenging location in the United States to achieve broadband development. It's critical that rural areas are able to realize the enormous benefits of broadband access and adoption. The work of Connect the Nation and the Denali Commission on broadband issues and the mapping project are critical for solving the rural broadband issue here. And AT&T looks forward to working with all the industry participants to address Alaska's broadband needs. Thank you for the opportunity to participate, and I will certainly take any questions if you have any.
Thank you very much, Mr. Olson. And we did note the connection in Juneau. So, any questions of Mr. Olson? Thank you very much, Mr. Olson. So certainly the last to be called, but certainly not to be looked upon as the last in a line, so to speak, but is Ted Maninsky of ACS Broadband Team.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
I believe we are hearing you adequately.
If that's a problem, I'll find a different phone since I'm contacting you telephonically from my own office. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for the opportunity to join you in this discussion today. And I would like to begin by introducing myself. My name is Ted Maninsky. I'm here today representing Alaska Communication Systems. I'd like to begin with some brief history about broadband development in Alaska. As the committee probably knows, ACS is an integrated and diversified communications company that operates throughout Alaska. Some of my comments today will be specifically directed at wireless communications. That recent history I referred to begins many years ago, but in particular I want to enter it at about 2004 when ACS deployed its CDMA wireless platform, and built upon that it began to deploy the initial EVDO, or what is referred to as the 3G broadband wireless service. Interestingly, at that time, the communities, the Alaska communities of Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau joined Washington, D.C. and San Diego, California as being the first markets that were EVDO broadband capable in the country. So it was quite an accomplishment. In subsequent years, ACS has expanded its EVDO to other locations in Alaska, including Kenai, Soldotna, Homer, Sitka, North Pole, Dead Horse, and Kuparuk. More recently, ACS has invested hundreds of millions of dollars to both acquire and to build undersea cable systems that are needed to provide high-speed connectivity to both enterprise and consumer customers throughout the state. ACS's in-state network has also been expanded and upgraded to provide fiber optic connectivity between Anchorage and Fairbanks and between Anchorage and Homer to facilitate the internet handoffs to the undersea fiber systems that take the internet traffic to the lower 48 internet peering locations. As we look to the future, most providers, I think, would agree that the cost-effective way to advance broadband internet access is through wireless technology. As a result, ACS is now exploring what is referred to as 4G, or the fourth generation technology, which is expected to be available in the next several years. It also has great potential to deliver several times the current level of bandwidth that we enjoy today. Where feasible, ACS deploys its infrastructure to enhance communications both within and between communities. However, no one has yet produced the solution for providing affordable broadband to the most rural Alaska locations. Some of the applications that you may have heard of, like YouTube and peer-to-peer file transfers, are completely constrained when you have to rely on satellite backhauls to get the internet traffic to the internet itself, to those peering locations in the lower 48. 4G backhaul is going to be equally constrained to the extent that the only opportunity to get from the customer to the internet peering location is a satellite connection. The challenges that we're facing in broadband in most rural locations are primarily driven by economics. We heard Mr. Smith from the University of Alaska use the term business case, and that is the issue, the typical lack of compelling business cases that support the cost of investment to build these networks. You're simply unable to invest where a reasonable opportunity to recover capital and earn a return on investment does not typically exist. The concern that we have, too, is not simply for deployment cost. It is not just construction cost. It is the operations cost. A combination of those costs typically are going to exceed forecasted revenues. A lack of adequate and affordable backhaul between very rural communities and the Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau hubs poses the greatest challenge. I have a few comments to offer on SB 175, and I understand you won't be moving the legislation today, but I'd like to give you a little bit of feedback on behalf of ACS. One of the things that we noted when we reviewed the draft legislation is that many of the tasks and goals seem to overlap and replicate some of the current activities that have been undertaken by, for example, the Federal Communications Commission, the NTIA, the RUS, the Denali Commission, and the University of Alaska. To some extent, the role and mission of the two entities that are proposed to be created by the legislation also seem to have some overlaps. ACS would encourage you to analyze those carefully and to avoid any duplications where possible, and I suspect that that you'll be taking a closer look at those issues when you are looking at fiscal notes associated with the legislation. There was also a reference in Section 2 of the legislation to something that was called Internet Cost Equalization, or the Internet Cost Equalization Program. It was unclear exactly what was being called out in that reference. However, having spent a long time in the regulatory process and having worked for the former Public Utilities Commission at one time, the term Power Cost Equalization Program comes to mind. Again, it's not at all clear whether or not this terminology would suggest some sort of similar program. But as you continue your deliberations on the bill, it would probably be helpful for that to be clarified. The other thing that's in the draft legislation, too, is it refers to pursuing a dial-up connectivity objective. Dial-up is a dated technology, and in any event does not produce a broadband connection to the Internet. It is probably unlikely that dial-up is going to be getting a lot of attention and a lot of resources on a going-forward basis. However, the broadband goals that are in the legislation are certainly commendable, and the notion that they could be achieved within the next 5 years, however, simply doesn't speak to those underlying economic impediments that I referred to earlier. If the cost of deployments are funded by grants, and you've heard some folks today, including the last speaker from GCI, I'm sorry, the speaker from GCI, refer to grant funding that is becoming available. If those costs are supported by grants, and ongoing operating expenses are supported by federal or state universal service programs, the private sector providers will likely be incented to deploy and operate broadband networks to most rural locations. The converse is true, though, that if that funding is not available, those incentives simply won't exist. Current revenue forecasts that support infrastructure investment are sustainable only with grant and loan funding and universal service support. One of the things that ACS is concerned about is whether or not these mechanisms are really viable on a going forward basis. I would mention to you that the federal universal service system is supported by a series of surcharges that are paid by business customers and consumers. The current federal universal service surcharge is 14% and growing. And there's a considerable amount of pushback from communities and policymakers throughout the country that would suggest that people believe that the fund is simply growing too large. If that's true, what will happen to that fund when and if it is expected to support broadband operations? Again, it is simply unclear whether current support mechanisms can continue to grow. And absent such multi-level support, again, both on the deployment end and on the operations end, the state could at some point in time simply face the alternative that the state itself may wind up having to support some of these networks. In particular, as many people have discussed today, what we refer to as the middle mile or the backhaul network that actually aggregates the Internet traffic from the rural locations, brings it to one of the urban hubs, and then hands it off to these undersea cables to get the traffic to the lower 48. That is the key element of the ability to continue to expand broadband deployment here in Alaska. That concludes my comments. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss these important topics with you, and I'm available to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, I would like to thank all of the persons that appeared here today. Mr. Mike Black, Deputy Commissioner, was our first witness and has stayed here throughout that. We then had Tessa Renner from the Denali Commission, Steve Smith from the University of Alaska. Mr. Bob Pickett has remained with us as well, the Chair of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Brent Legg from Connected Nation, Martin Carey, GCI Broadband, Martin Carey, GCI Broadband, Jason Olson, AT&T Broadband, Ted Moninsky, ACS Broadband, and Ike Eichardt of Kodiak Kenai Cable Company. So I think that we've had a very informative program today on broadband, where we are, and hopefully where we will go in the next several years. I think broadband infrastructure access is fundamental to economic development and economic opportunities in Alaska. Broadband distribution of education, medicine, public safety, as well as the economic opportunities therewith will transform Alaska and not only connect all Alaskans with each other, but with the world, and we are on the verge of seeing that come to a reality. So I would conclude by indicating that the next Senate Labor and Commerce meeting is this Thursday, February 4th. We will convene at 2 p.m., and this will be an overview of economic development in an area other than broadband, but again, on economic development opportunities in the state of Alaska. So with that, we are adjourned.